Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:10 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 24th. Well, let's kick off and look at the European 10-year. This is analogous to the Bund yield. It's at 18 basis points. Back in 1994, it was over 8%, and we perhaps don't have very much more back history than that for German yields. But when we look at the chart, there's a clear downtrend and there is no evidence it's over. And zero has been a boundary that was tested in 2016. And of course, this is for the longer end of the curve. It's obviously, we know that we had negative yields on much of the German yield curve until quite recently. And still on the short end of the curve, you've got negative yields. So I think this is rather important because there is this rather vain hope that was being expressed by Angela Merkel yesterday, for whose benefit one would have to question, when she said that she hopes that they can get back to normal monetary policy. Who's she speaking to? It's certainly not to the ECB, because the ECB are miles away from trying to raise interest rates, not to mind reducing the size of their balance sheet. They're going to be reinvesting those bonds for the foreseeable future. So that raises the very real question of what is Europe going to do the next time that they run into a problem, since they're still dealing with the last headache. Well, Japanese yields peaked in 1990 around 8%, and they are now also at zero. They're at 1 basis point rather than 18, and I guess 17 basis points does mean something to somebody. But the reality is that both Europe and Japan share one thing in common. They have disastrous demographics. One of the reasons that you haven't had more, I think, upset and political activism within Europe is, generally speaking, popular revolts are led by young people, and quite simply, Europe doesn't have any. So that has been one of the reasons why you've had slow burn evolution of populist rhetoric and activity, because generally speaking, older people vote, whereas younger people just get out and burn. So that's, I think, one of the big differences now compared to what we saw, for example, in the 1960s. If you think about the 1960s, that's when you had real student activism, but of course you had a very large population of young people, and you just don't have that today. So that's a big, I think, similarity between Europe and Japan. And of course, the other one is the extent of the overhanging debt in the banking sector. And that's not going away. When we look at the banking sector in Europe, then it was in positive territory yesterday, and we've certainly started to see that the Spanish banks, which are now among the largest in Europe, are starting to do better. But this is an awfully big range, and it's been going on since 2011, or arguably from 2009. The price is just about finding support at the lower side of it. But when we think about whether this represents clear value from an investment perspective, one would have to really start to put on a Pollyanna-ish hat to come up with a really bullish argument for why Europe is suddenly going to resolve its issues. The simple fact of the matter is that there is no social transfer mechanism within the Eurozone. It's aspiring to be a federal state, but it's still a club of sovereign nations, and those sovereign nations are rather jealous of their rights. And certainly you're not going to have anybody in Germany support a government that is going to be sending tens, if not hundreds, of billions of euro south of the Alps. So That's going to represent a significant challenge. What it effectively means is that there is no mechanism through which debt can be forgiven. And it is that debt forgiveness is going to be the perennial issue for Europe, because the rise of populism means that there is eventually going to be a denouement, that eventually we're going to see it come to a head, and that this is going to represent a significant issue for the most indebted countries. So it's not simply something that's going to go away. So the chances are that we are going to see another round of quantitative easing from the ECB. And the first round of quantitative easing was in the region of 1 trillion. And the second, when you look at this very clear trend, it went from 2 to 4.7, and in fact, it has not stopped going up. That's despite the fact that the ECB said that they ended their bond buying program at the end of last year. Well, this was last updated on the 18th, and it is still going up. So Europe is still engaged in quantitative easing, and there is the very realistic possibility that they're not going to be able to stop. That QE2 for Europe could evolve into QE3. Well, that is a really rather significant potential source of additional liquidity for the global economy. Liquidity and capital is both global and mobile, so it will flow from wherever it is created to the most attractive assets, and that has helped to inflate this asset price, or I guess this liquidity-driven bull market that's been going on for the last 9 years. The reason that we have had this greater period of volatility is because of that restriction in availability of liquidity over the course of the last 9 months of last year. So I think that is a potential big story to really keep an eye on. Then, of course, you have news today about the trade war, where Wilbur Ross said that they're miles and miles apart, but that there is the possibility they will come together to have a trade agreement. And I think that it is getting increasingly likely that they will. There is a simple, I think, question that we can ask in order to really assess the potential for that. How ready is China militarily to face off against the USA? They're building aircraft carriers, they're building foreign bases in a daisy chain from the Persian Gulf back to China. That's just to secure their supply routes. They are shooting down satellites, they're modernizing their military, and they're actively pursuing a Made in China program. Well, they call it Made in China 2025, so that's 6 years from now, and they're investing an awful lot of money in that. Well, what that suggests is that they're not quite ready yet today, so China may be willing to deal today in order to buy time to achieve their longer-term ambitions sometime in the middle of the next decade. Well, that I think does raise the potential that there will be some form of trade deal, but the much bigger point is that it's probably not going to last more than a few years before China becomes truly assertive in terms of its geopolitical ambitions. I think that is something that we really do have to pay attention to. So those are, I think, the two big considerations that we have in the markets in here today. Now, if we look at some of the action that we've seen on stock markets, well, the S&P 500 was it squeaked out a positive return in here today. We've definitely seen a pause following what was a very impressive advance all the way up from December 26th and that big upside key reversal. So it has just about unwound the overextension relative to the trend mean, and this is the first area of potential. Well, in fact, it's the second area of potential resistance. 2600 was the first area. So we're starting to get some consolidation, and there has been a distinct absence of clear downward dynamics. So that is certainly positive. But the much bigger point is that the sequence of lower rally highs remains intact. We have certainly seen a larger rally, and that is positive. But I think we're not going to be able to really conclude that we're back in a demand-dominated environment just yet, at least until we see a higher reaction low. After a rebound such as this, it is quite normal to see some consolidation and even potentially a retest of the low, and we haven't had that yet. So this is still a rather tense environment. And the European indices are continuing to unwind their short-term oversold condition. I think it is important to remember with Europe that the weakness of the currency, and the euro was down by 68 ticks in here today, but that did break the sequence of higher reaction lows. And the simple fact of the matter that the Federal Reserve is reducing the size of its balance sheet and therefore the quantity of dollars available, whereas the ECB is increasing the size of its balance sheet and therefore the number of euro available. Well, that's a headwind for the euro. The consensus view among investors is that the dollar is going to collapse. And I think there is an argument that the dollar will trend lower when the Federal Reserve actually starts to either inflate its asset or its balance sheet again, or starts to cut interest rates. But until then, the fact is that the Federal Reserve is reducing the size of their balance sheet and therefore reducing the supply of the currency against a background where it's generally considered a safe haven asset, and therefore there's demand for it against this uncertain environment. Well, the dollar index has rebounded. It has certainly found near-term support in the region of the trend mean, and this continues to look like a bounce. When we look at the renminbi, well, the renminbi has paused in the region of the trend mean, and it has been weaker over the course of the last couple of weeks. This is a rather important area where, if the supply-dominated environment is going to remain intact, then it is going to bounce from here. I think that China can't really afford to have a currency that is accelerating lower because of the risk of capital flight that that would create. And China has plenty of things to worry about, but the thing that would really unhinge its ability to manage the credit liabilities that are certainly residing in the corporate sector would be capital flight. So they absolutely need to ward against that particular outcome. Of course, the renminbi is a largely controlled currency, whereas the Australian dollar is really very dependent on the outlook for the Chinese economy. And we have just started to see now the first area of resistance coming through following the rebound from that flash rally, or sorry, flash crash for the Aussie dollar, particularly against the yen. So, I do think now that 72 cents is the latest touchstone in terms of this really quite consistent downtrend. The relative weakness of the currency is likely to be a tailwind, at least in nominal terms, for the ASX 200. It's a very similar situation for the European markets, that they do tend to rally in nominal terms when their currencies go down. So there's certainly that to pay attention to. The Philadelphia Semiconductors Index was up in a dynamic manner in here today. Well, I just saw the news headline flashing along the bottom of the screen that Intel was down 8% in after hours following their earnings. It's probably worth just simply looking at Intel because it had been right up at the upper side of its range, and it's likely now pulling back below that, or at least pulling back to the region of the trend mean at the minimum. Well, when we start to think about some of the very big declines that we have seen over the course of the last few months. Well, Lam Research was one of the bigger advancers in here today, and if it can hold the rally through to the end of this week, well, then it could potentially be breaking its sequence of lower rally highs. There is certainly demand for fundamentally cheap companies, and Apple is a fundamentally cheap company if you just look at the valuations, that it has an estimated PE of 12 and it has a dividend yield of 1.9%, and it has free cash flow in the order of $64 billion. So it's not as if they don't have plenty of cash. It's really the question is, what is the outlook for their business model? Because we are potentially at peak phone. Well, eventually they may embark upon a subscription business model. There hasn't been quite the same talk about Samsung, but objectively, Samsung is perhaps cheaper than Apple. And it has a somewhat bigger market, and with an estimated PE of 3.4 and a yield of 3.2, sorry, 8.4 and 3.2, and a dividend growth rate that is rather impressive, although it hasn't released its dividend yet for December. So I think we are at a potential that Samsung could be a better play than Apple just on a value metric. But there is, of course, the I think the fan element that people tend to be much more admiring of Apple. Then when we look at some of those other big technology companies, Amazon has got a very similar pattern to the Nasdaq 100, and it was in positive territory in here today, and it is so far holding this rebound. And this has so far been a reasonably orderly consolidation. If this is the magnitude of the consolidation, then that would be incredibly bullish, because it would greatly increase the potential that it could break the sequence of lower rally highs. So I've often talked about Amazon for the simple reason that it has been the share that where people have been buying the dips. And so far, that's still working. And as long as buying the dips is working in Amazon, then I think the broader investment community is still going to be reasonably sanguine about the broader economy and technology sector, because Amazon sits very squarely between the health of the global consumer, because it's essentially a retail business, and then also the technology sector generally. Then Netflix, which has been resurgent over the course of the last while, had got all the way up to test its downtrend. And now we're starting to see some consolidation. So again, this is really a modest consolidation so far relative to the size of the advance, and as long as that's all that it is, then that would be really quite a sanguine view. But I think there is the potential here that we could get a deeper pullback, that we are potentially due some additional consolidation on stock markets, that there are sufficient numbers of reasons for why we could anticipate that there would be some reticence about being overly bullish. I think that does suggest we are still in a corrective environment, although the rally that we've had off of the December lows is very encouraging, and it does suggest that there is definitely some bargain hunting going on. Well, when we start to look at what's going on in the ASEAN region, then there are certainly a number of elections coming out, and we, I think, have to bear in mind that it's all about governance. And when we say that governance is everything, then that's particularly true where there's clear evidence that there is either a threat to existing standards of governance, or where there is evidence of clearly improving standards of governance. Well, it's in the ASEAN region primarily that we see very clear evidence of improving standards of governance. And The way that we would think about that is in terms of respect for minority shareholder interests, that you have an independent judiciary and you've got property rights. Because if you've got those three things, then the chances are that when you make an investment, then you can defend it and that you will have ownership of it and that it's not simply going to be taken away from you. You certainly have that in India, for example, and you have it in Indonesia. You don't have those sorts of characteristics in China. What people have been lured into in China is that you have access to a very large and dynamic market. But that's the whole reason why we're having this trade conversation. And what I find particularly interesting in here today is that at 10-year Treasury prices have bounced rather impressively. 121 was an area of resistance between approximately March and December, and now it's potentially an area of support. And continued demand for treasuries is, I think, representative of demand for safe havens, and also that, generally speaking, that if we look at the longer term chart of the yield, that it has paid over the course of this long history in terms of the compression of bond yields to short the rallies. So that's what people have done. They have come in and started shorting the rallies. They are completely ignoring the fact that there is a wall of additional new supply that is due to be issued, but they are betting that the value that is represented by yields at a mere 2.7% outweighs what's going to be available in other asset classes. Well, that really is representative of a continued reticence to believe that the stock market is going to rebound, that the Federal Reserve is going to raise interest rates, or that we're not still in the latter stages of this economic expansion. But being in the latter stages and being at the end are two different things. Generally speaking, when we think about high yield spreads, they have certainly pulled back over the course of the last 2 weeks, and that has been one of the supporting factors in terms of the rally that we've seen in stock markets. But generally speaking, when we go back and think about the history, that usually the first run above 500 basis points leads to a consolidation. That was certainly what happened in 2014, and then prices started to come down and yields expanded even further. So when high yield spreads move higher, then that is a headwind to the stock market, and it is also a is representative of tighter liquidity conditions. And the yield curve spread is now at 15 basis points. So we're continuing to see that liquidity is an issue, and that this downtrend in terms of the yield curve spread has not been broken, that it is really rather orderly, and that the potential here is that it is going to contract further. Then, of course, you have the fact that the federal government in the USA is shut, and that there are going to be federal workers that are going to start missing their mortgage payments when we get to the end of this month. So that's going to represent a significant challenge. That's also obviously going to have an effect on consumer sentiment as we look at the potential for earnings in the first quarter. So these are potential issues that can have a sort of wide range effects. And that also suggests that it is perhaps not quite time yet to conclude that this corrective phase on stock markets is over. Then, if we look at other safe haven assets, well, gold prices remain reasonably steady. And what I find particularly interesting here is that ETF holdings of gold were at a new high in here this week. So what that suggests is that the people who are buying gold are buying ETFs, so it's unlikely to be central bank buying that is helping to propel the market higher. Silver prices were pretty much unchanged in here today, and they're not far from the $15 area, which was the upper side of the underlying trading range. Whereas palladium prices were down in a reasonably dynamic manner in here today, and that does confirm that we have a peak of near-term significance and that a reversionary process back towards the mean is probably unfolding. So that suggests that we're definitely getting some trading around in terms of commodities. What is interesting is that lumber prices were limit up in here today, and that is breaking up and out of what is a 3 to 4 month base formation. And considering that the price had collapsed from the peak in May, this is really the first sign now of a return to demand dominance beyond the short term. Well, that is, I think, starting to lend some credence to the view that property developers should be doing better from here. They have been pulling back over the last 10 days, and this was a positive day for the sector. Toll Brothers, which generally makes more expensive houses, has broken back above the trend mean and has been firming from this $35 area. So that's also looking positive from here. The return to performance of the home sector would certainly be an indication that the retail and the consumer sectors are still reasonably healthy. So this is definitely a sector to keep an eye on. Then, of course, you have the banking sector, which was also in positive territory in here today and is coming back up towards the region of the trend mean. So there are green shoots here. There is certainly some evidence that we're getting some demand dominance coming back in. I continue to think that the most likely scenario is that we're going to get some further consolidation. I think that we're definitely getting some better outcomes in terms of the lead indicators in terms of consumer sentiment, but liquidity conditions are still tight. And what that tells us is that it's unlikely we're going to see markets push on to new high ground until they start to weaken again, or I guess not weaken, but to loosen again. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.